Coming up on this WTF 1-to-1, I speak to F1 world champion Mario Andretti, who may well be joining the sport with his very own F1 team. It was great to hear stories of what it was like to drive in Formula 1 back when he was in it, and also to get his thoughts on what Formula 1 is like now, in his opinion. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new podcast series called WTF 1-to-1. With me, your host, Matt Gallagher, where I'll be chatting to some legendary names across motorsport. Today, we have a very special guest indeed. He is one of only two drivers to have won races in Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, and the World Sports Car Championship. Not only that, but he is also a Formula One world champion, winning the title in 1978. Safe to say, it's a pretty damn awesome guest indeed. It is, of course, Mario Andretti. Mario, how are you? Welcome.
Wonderful, Matt. Thank you. Thanks for taking the chance to have me on your show.
Oh, well, thank you for spending the time. We've collated some questions from some fans. We put a tweet out quite recently, and a lot of people were excited to have you on the show. So we're just going to dive into some questions, obviously a lot of them around Formula One. So I'm going to start with one from Claire Rook. And this is probably a question you've been asked many times. How far along is your bid to join the Formula One grid? Claire Rook says, I'd love to see an Andretti F1 team. Have they met any resistance from Formula One teams? First of all, how is the Formula One bid going?
Well, I think it's going pretty well at the moment. In the sense, we're working on it every day, every single day. We have a team on the ground, basically in Europe and here. So Michael and his team and myself, we're every single day answering questions and just try to comply with all the requests. And so that's all we can do. I mean, we're waiting for them to just tell us, okay, what else do you need? What else do you want to know? And so far, I don't know anything that we have not complied with.
So tell us a little bit about the process of trying to join Formula One. I imagine it's quite a lengthy procedure.
Yeah, I don't think we have the time on this time for the show to explain everything. It's quite complicated, and they obviously can make it as complicated as they like. It's all in their hands, and it's it's Formula One, it's Liberty Media, the FOM, and all that. Obviously, the teams have a say on it. So you have to satisfy so many factions. Again, they can make it as difficult as they please. Sometimes I cannot believe that the process has to be this complicated. But they have to realize how serious we are, how committed we are. And it's not just in and out. It's a long, long-term commitment with the investment that is going to be made. So please take us seriously. This is all we do. This is all we love. This is all we've ever done in our professional life. So what's the problem here? So that's really where we stand. So we want to be on the grid in 2024.
You just want to go racing. It's as simple as that.
We want to go racing. Yes, this is our life.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Claire Rook actually did part of their question was around meeting any resistance from Formula One teams, because you mentioned they do have a say in all of this. Is that where the main blockage is right now, or is there any other area that's a particular struggle?
Well, it seems like you can speak with some team principals and you get some, you get an idea and you have some sort of an agreement. Then all of a sudden it's the situation turns, So it's not very clear, where the actual resistance is at the moment. But I would say the teams perhaps, or the Liberty side, is probably the most problem.
So what does it say about Formula One then, if they say no to you joining?
Well, it would be the biggest disappointment of our life in motorsports, no question, to be totally shut out of something that we love, something we've done, something we've lived for, something that for me has been the basic love of how my love for the sport was born, Formula One. And then if they reject us, I think it would be for me probably the worst moment of my career.
Well, let's spin it on a positive. Let's say it does happen. There's a user on Twitter called PinguNoot92 who asks, if Andretti Racing is joining Formula One, who will be your power unit supplier?
Well, I cannot go into details. You know, we have agreements and so forth, but, you know, until you have all the pieces together, I cannot divulge that type of information. All I can tell you is that all of those aspects are solid. You know, otherwise we would not even be talking. So you have to take that. And but as far as the ultimate details, I cannot give you that at the moment. I'm sorry.
No problem. I thought I'd ask anyway. So I guess looking at Formula One as a whole at the moment, of course, you want to join, you say 2024. What do you think of the current state of Formula One at the moment? Is it in a good place, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Yes, indeed. No question about it. It's all positive and so in everywhere. I don't see any negatives there at the moment. The fan base is growing. The racing is fabulous. The teams, the driver talent, the driver pool is as good as ever. You have this great rivalries happening. Ferrari is competitive again. You know, all of these factors play huge in maintaining the interest and making it what it should be. So you can always be able to tell, you know, the level of interest when you're looking forward to the next race. And you know, we can always just wait, and we cannot, you know, wait for the next race to happen because it's now it's unpredictable. And that's the fascinating part about it.
Yeah, exactly. It gives you great opportunities if you join Formula One as well. You don't exactly know where you'll shake up straight away. And on the flip side of that, apart from probably making the process of joining Formula One a lot easier, is there anything else that you'd change?
Well, no. I mean, offhand, you could have some opinions here and there, but in general, I think a lot of things are working. I think they're having some issues with the car, with the new rules. You know, the downforce aspect is creating all some of this porpoising, which, again, it's actually more than annoying for the drivers, and some of the teams are having worse issues than others. But all of that is going to get cured sooner or later. So that's really basically the biggest thing that at the moment needs attention to.
Now, there's a question from Max2223 who asks, if you could pick two drivers to join Andretti in Formula One, who would they be and why?
Well, I will just pick one at the moment. The second one, I mean, is open, but the first one would be Colton Herta. I've said this many times, I just really think that he's the right talent to join that Formula One because he really, really wants it. And he has trained there as a youngster. I can say, you know, I've said it many times back in Formula Ford, you know, with the likes of Lando Norris and so forth. And he has some, and his road racing is impeccable, his skills. So that's the one that obviously is slated for to have the one seat, and the other one it could be anyone at the moment. You never know what the opportunities will be, but the number one right now is the most important for me.
Okay, interesting. There's been a lot of talk around potentially it being a full American driver lineup. Is that ideally what you'd like, or is it quite open and you're not certain just yet?
I think that side needs to be reassessed or assessed, quite honestly. I think on the other side, on the second driver, you need some experience, some solid experience alongside of Colton, so he can measure up against something like that, because that's the only way you can evaluate the performance of the car. I think, but all of these are being evaluated even as we speak.
Okay, interesting. We'll wait to hear some more droplets of information as and when, hopefully, the process starts to clear up for you. Going away a little bit from your Formula One team you want to introduce, and more to yourself and potentially driving a Formula One car, thanks to Zac Brown. Is there any update with that? Is that happening?
Yes, obviously, you know, Zac Brown, when he says something, his word is good as gold. So, yes, I speak with him frequently. And it's slated to be at COTA, during the race weekend. And I think they have some time available for me to do a few laps. And I'm so looking forward to that, as you can imagine. I'm counting on it. I know it's going to happen.
Wow, that would be quite the experience. Is that in the 22 car? Is it a show car? What do you know, any details just yet?
Well, it would have to be last year's car. It would have to be the present car is not allowed to be tested, openly. So by anyone outside of present drivers that, they're with the team. So that's part of the regulations.
So, they're not going to put you in a free practice one. Oh, that's what I was hoping for, just get back out there.
whatever they want me to do, I'll do it.
That's amazing. I guess then you won't be concerned as much then if it's a 21 car for any porpoising, which has obviously been a big talking point in Formula One this year.
Well, I'm very familiar with porpoising. I think it was invented when I was driving with Lotus. So I know all those qualities, and it is indeed annoying to the driver, and more even than that. But except that the only good thing about porpoising, it means you have really, really good downforce. So you have that going for you. If it doesn't porpoise very much, that means that downforce effect is rather light.
Yeah, good grip, but maybe not so much great visibility when you're bouncing up and down that much.
There you go. I take the grip all day, anytime.
So you say you've experienced it yourself when you were driving. Would you say it was worse, different? How would you compare the porpoising you kind of experienced to, you saw Mercedes last time out in Baku and how ferocious it was there? Is it comparable?
It's comparable, but I think the porpoise is more frequent right now. I see that it's even when I porpoise, was not, the frequency was not as great as what I see today. Today it's just, that type of thing, which has to be clearly. I mean, listen to the drivers, to their reaction. I understand exactly what they're saying, and on a physical aspect, it's got to work on you pretty hard, because you're out there for an hour and a half plus, but it some have a better handle to that than others. Not every car is equal, as you can imagine. Sooner or later we'll come to grips with it, we all did at one point. But it has a lot to do with the regulations, because how far do you push the regulation? That's what it really is. And so the only way that you will get rid of porpoising if somehow the rules would change dramatically, so everyone else has to comply with it.
I think a lot of the obviously teams have been spreading out their upgrades a little bit more due to the the limitations of the cost cap, for example. That's something, of course, you'll have to factor in, hopefully, when you join 2024. How problematic is that cost cap being in place in terms of developing?
Well, problematic. I mean, it's something everyone has to deal with, and you try to deal with it, as masterfully as possible. It's like you're given something, and you got to figure out how to take the best advantage of it. And that's it. But if it's something that's everyone has to deal with, that's it. And I don't know what else you could say about it.
Interesting stuff. Going back slightly to you driving the F1 car, how would you drive it? Would you just go all out? Would you think, well, this isn't my car? What's the mentality going to be when you get in the cockpit?
Well, obviously, I want to bring the car back, you know, in one piece. So I want to satisfy myself to the point that I have a really a decent feel of it. I know what a feel of a race car should be, and you know, and have that as an experience of my latest life, and savor that to the fullest. I so much appreciate that opportunity that I cannot even express that, because this is what I live for, and so it means so much to me. It's amazing that you know, Zach Brown and McLaren is making that available to me. I will owe him forever.
I can promise you it'll make some headlines when that happens. There'll be some amazing content, I'm sure, coming out of it. Right, next question is from Kieran _ Shaker. With the new American tracks being focused on street circuits, is there an existing classic American circuit you feel would be perfect for Formula One?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think great Formula One circuit would be Road America, Elkhart Lake, where Indy was just this past weekend. It's got the length of the lap. It's got all of what the drivers really love as far as the, you know, elevations and myriad of corners, great overtaking points. But I don't think it's up to the levels, to the standard of Formula One at the moment as far as the infrastructure. But as far as the circuit itself, all you have to do is ask Roman Grosjean, you know, who's fresh from Formula One. It's just the love that is just like it's the American Spa, you know. So, that's the one that I would say. But, you know, Coda, Austin is a fabulous circuit in America. We're very proud of that. But honestly, I mean, I don't know if any driver don't really enjoy driving that circuit. So we have it right there and it's happening. Of course, you know, in Miami now, in Las Vegas, Miami, we experienced there was some issues, I think, with what they did with the surfacing, you know. And I think it would have been really good if it was a wet race or something like that, because I was looking, it was very coarse and so on and so forth, would have drained very well, but it was a dry race. And so the grip level was not all that good because, you know, there were a lot of marbles, you know, and the track being so coarse, it was, you know, it was just really creating a bit of havoc with the tires. So it was creating marbles. So if you went offline, you were in a bit of trouble, but all of that is going to be cured. I give them credit for what they've done as far as the first effort. They're willing to just do things right. So next year, I think all of that is going to be resolved. And Vegas, we have yet to see what that's going to be like. But nevertheless, all of these impromptu circuits, if you will, you know, they provide a very special challenge. And as a driver, some drivers, I'm sure, like the idea, some don't. But nevertheless, it's equal for everyone to deal with. And the efforts are there. They're honest efforts, a lot of investment. And when you have a lot of investment, it represents a solid future. You know, so the fact that next year you'll be looking at three Formula One events in the United States is totally awesome for the strength of what we have now as a Formula One fan base.
How amazing has it been to see America take Formula One into its loving arms, it seems, since the likes of Drive to Survive and things like that? Have you noticed a change?
Oh, everyone has. Yes, indeed. And that's to me, and motor racing is motor racing. I just love motor racing, period. I love, you know, all the different disciplines. You know, that's, again, that's what I've enjoyed. That's what gave me all the satisfaction in my entire career. And so Formula One was at the very beginning of my life, and it will always be there. And so I love Formula One, love Indy cars, NASCAR, love sports prototypes. So you have it.
An incredibly versatile driver you were as well when you were driving. Is there a, we spoke about Colton Herta and, you know, him being your number one if you were to come in 2024. Is there any other driver that comes to mind that deserves to be in Formula One, even if it's right now and not driving for your team?
Yeah, I think, again, I think it depends on the individual, but that the talent level up there in Indy, I think is superb, in my opinion. You can't tell me that Alex Palou would not be one, for instance. You got, I don't know, that Joseph Newgarden, for one, is another one that I see right at this, at the top level of in road racing. I mean, I think Rossi would probably, with the right equipment again, I think he would have a lot to offer. Yeah, there's several. I think that if, providing they really wanted to, if they had the right opportunity, they could get the job done, no question. It's all vice versa. I mean, it's, you know, it's not superhuman, to, you know, to just be in Formula One. If you're in Formula One, if you're at the top level of this discipline, especially, you know, IndyCar, if you're at the top level, I think you'd be able to cut it in Formula One if you really wanted to. But it has to be a basic, strong desire to do it, not just, oh, yeah, okay, I'd rather give it a. You got to really want it. It's nothing like if you're driven by burning desire, you get it done.
So do you think that's maybe why we haven't seen more Indy drivers go over to Formula One, is because they just don't have the burning desire? Is it a lack of opportunity? Where do you think the problem lies a little bit?
Yeah, I think it lies in that, like you said. I think the one thing about America, it's probably the only country on the planet that can offer a top level career, you know, without really technically having a passport. Because we can see, I mean, a driver can specialize like an IndyCar, can specialize in NASCAR, or just even sports prototype and not even go abroad. And that's what you have. And some, you know, I look at myself, I was born and raised in Europe. I fell in love with Formula One because that was the, you know, the supreme motorsports at the time, you know, living in Italy and all that, you know, obviously in the 50s, having current world champions there, Ferrari, Maserati, and so forth. You know, being at the top level of performance. And, you know, but if I was born with that, and so my passion has got to be so different than if you're born here, even looking at my own kids, you know, and so forth. They were not born with that, you know, they were first exposed like to Indy cars or whatever. So, it's hard to really, for me to calculate how all of this plays, but I can only speak for myself. And if, again, during my career, I could have just specialized in one area to stay there, but I was looking for just challenges that gave me so much satisfaction by not just there, but trying to win, you know, in a different category, the different disciplines. And the trick is clearly, you know, to be with a team that gives you a capable equipment. You know, you cannot perform miracles, obviously, no matter how good you think you are. You need the equipment to get it done, the team behind. And, you know, I was very fortunate that when I had Formula One, I had some great opportunity with the right teams. And even when I went to NASCAR, you know, I had a factory team and everything, and prototypes again, you know, Ferrari, Porsche and all that. And you need to be armed with that. Without that, you just can't get it done. That's clear. Going back to, it's an individual thing. But look at all of a sudden, Fernando Alonso, for instance. You know, he went on a hiatus in Formula One. He figured, I got to try something else. And just because he wanted to do it, look how successful he was. Because he has a talent, but he had the desire. You have to have that burning desire to do it. Not to do it to satisfy somebody else. You have to satisfy yourself first. That's all. I never did anything to satisfy anybody else, you know, any of my friends. I want to satisfy myself. If I'm satisfying myself, that's all I need to do.
Yeah, so I guess it's that you just have to focus absolutely on yourself, whether it's training, racing, making connections, all whatever. It takes up your whole life, I imagine.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, if you want it so badly, I mean, I was looking forward to that. To me, getting in the race car was looking forward to going to work. How many people look forward to going to work? Well, that's a blessing in life, isn't it? And I've been blessed my entire life because I couldn't hardly wait to get in a race car. I still do today in my own ways, you know. So it's something that it means so much. It gives me just a reason to live type of thing. It's that deep.
No, it's amazing to hear. And it's a great segue as well, because I've got some questions about your career. Ben Carroll 971 asks, what is the single greatest memory from your career, if you can choose one?
Well, here again, on a personal side, I think I have to go back to how it all started, where it started, and my true passion, where Plan B was not part of my career. Plan A only was when I saw my very first Grand Prix, you know, age 14 in Monza in Italy, 1954. And then, you know, at that point, the impossible dream was to become a Formula One driver, emulate my idol Alberto Ascari being a world champion. You know, as a kid, you're allowed to dream, right? And then when all of that came true and clinching the world championship in Monza, winning the Monza, you know, the Grand Prix of Italy, on a personal side, no one could put more value than that but me. And if I've been blessed about other things, you know, winning 4 national championship, winning dirt track championship and all of that, winning Indy and you know, some of those events. But as the ultimate personal what I was really satisfaction was that, because that's where the dream began. And it was an impossible dream that came true.
It's lovely to hear. That's really, really cool. There's another question from Jonty's underscore corner, which is tied in a little bit with that. What meant more to you when you won the Formula One World Drivers' Championship, Daytona 500, or Indy 500? Was there one particular out of those three?
Well, I don't think you can compare a championship with one race. That's one thing that I'll give you, for instance, when I won the Indy 500 in 1969, the national championship meant a lot more to me than the Indy 500. However, career-wise, there was more value in the Indy 500, unfortunately, quite honestly, but that's the way it is. Just like NASCAR, Daytona is the crown jewel of the NASCAR series. But is that more important for a driver than winning a championship? I don't think so. Here's the way you cannot measure one race versus a championship. When I look in 69, winning that national championship, I won counting for the championship races on the dirt, on a super speedway oval, short oval. I even won Pikes Peak that counted for the points. So that was, to me, that was the crowning point, you know, and the Indy, yeah, obviously, but unfortunately, everybody just thinks or remembers Indy. Oh, I was there, the Indy 500, you know. Well, what about the rest of the season? Yeah, there's value in that, and you know, but I look at the bigger picture. Championships are championships. So again, I hope I explained myself there.
Absolutely. Yeah, you did. The question that I've got is, with all of that success, how did you manage yourself and stay grounded? Because obviously success can change people and lead you down different paths. How was it that you kept going and kept winning? Was there any particular sort of approach that you had when doing this?
Well, again, it's always just looking forward to the next experience, you know, and if you look forward to it, that's what you want in life. And having good support, you know, from my family, from my wife especially, you know, she was the one who was so grounded, so just even, solid, you know, no ticker tape parade when I won, and then, you know, just be somber, you know, when you don't. Everything was even. I got the same welcome, same kiss when I came back from a race, whether I had a trophy with me or not. All of that meant a great deal, and I even realized that even later in life, you know, when you start reflecting on certain aspects of your life, and I said, you know, how valuable that was for me. All of those things played tremendously, but the bottom line is, how much are you enjoying it, and are you really looking forward to it? I don't know if everybody does. I couldn't get enough of racing. I mean, I was doing, you know, during my championship in Formula One, I won 3 IndyCar races for Roger Penske. I won the IROC championship, you know, with the, you know, with it was IROC was international, you know, was international racing champions. Yeah. Something like that. You know, with all the equally prepared Camaros, where you had drivers from all the different disciplines coming together. And that, you know, so again, what I'm saying is, I couldn't get enough. And there are times when even my wife, Deanne, would say, do you know, it looks like a weekend off. Do you have to? Oh, yeah, well, yeah, I'm racing somewhere else, you know, type of thing. So I always wanted to plug. I didn't have to do it. I could have just stayed, you know, okay, I'll take a weekend off, especially Formula One. You always get, and then you get a weekend off and so forth. No, on that weekend, I was racing something else. Why did I have to? No, I wanted to. I needed that. That's it. I don't know how to explain it any different.
No,
I
needed it. It's crystal clear. You can still see that burning passion now. That's really awesome to see. You've mentioned and listed off a lot of victories. I've got to ask, where is this trophy room, and is it the size of a town? Like, where do you store all your trophies?
Oh, I'm very proud of that. Yeah, we have trophies around. We have them upstairs. Trophies are there. They represent my work, and just looking around, it brings back some sweet memories. Of course. That's a great reminder, obviously, when I just walked past. Oh, yeah, I've been there. That was a great day and all that.
So how many do you reckon you've got in total?
Well, in total, there's around, was it 436 or something?
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of trophies. And do you have all of them?
I have, I don't have 6 Formula One trophies. I loaned them to Lotus at one point, and I never got them back because a big manifestation or something, and then somehow I never got them back.
Okay, 430 though. That's still quite a lot. Final question is, who will win the F1 World Championship this year?
Well, I wish I had that. Yeah, I wish I had that power. But I think I'm looking at what would be good. I think obviously very, very popular with Max Verstappen, you know, for him, since it was a bit controversial if he would repeat, to show that, you know, but he didn't have to prove anything more, but just to say, okay, I've done it again. And I think for Formula One would be very healthy if Ferrari, if say Charles Leclerc could come with a championship, I think it would in my opinion, it would probably would animate that huge, huge Ferrari fan base all over the globe, you know, in a way that you could ever imagine again. So that's really, those are the two aspects that I have. And who knows? I mean, each one of these is very possible. Then you could have a surprise somewhere. Who knows? I mean, that's you cannot predict it. There's a lot of season yet left, as you can imagine. So, but these are the two things that I would probably like to see that would be actually good for Formula One.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Mario, for coming on this WTF 1-to-1. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And be sure to keep an eye on our socials to see who will be next on this podcast series. Thank you all. Bye-bye.